Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to the Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we bring you an insightful discussion on the latest issues facing the Catholic Church and the culture we live in from a theological perspective. Today's topic, if they persecuted me, they will persecute you. Up first, we have author and political science professor and senior director of the Institute for Faith and Freedom, Paul Kengor. He joins us from Grove City, Pennsylvania, fine author too. We also have the political activist, sociologist, and author, and former president of the Catholic League, Bill Donahue. He is with us today from New York City, as always. And finally, we have EW10's vice president of theology, Colin Donovan. He is, again, in our theology studio. And before we get started, I wanted to call out, Bill, you've got a book that just came out recently. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that book?
Right. Thank you so much. Yeah, 10 books put it out. It's Christianity in the Crosshairs, Ruling Class and Radicals Find a Common Enemy. And that's basically the thesis is in the subtitle that in the past, radicals and the ruling class were somewhat opposed to each other. Now they've become conflated, not altogether, but so often. And they've got us in the crosshairs.
Right, kind of fits into our topic today. Also, Paul, you also have a fine book I finally got a chance to interview you on, having to do with the Holy Father, right?
Yeah, thanks, Doug. Good to be with you guys, with Bill, who I respect so much, with Colin. And yeah, I have a new biography of Pope Leo, and it's a very lengthy, you know, substantive effort. It's about 120,000 words, over 400 pages. Mm-hmm. And I finished it pretty much last fall. And if people want to follow me to see where I've been writing more about the Pope lately, I'm the editor of the American Spectator. So go to spectator.org and look at my article archive there. And I've been writing on everything from Pope Leo and immigration to just war theory to his spats, let's say, with with Donald Trump in recent weeks and months.
There you go. And somehow I'm hosting this show. I can't figure that part out. Bill, let me ask you, you know, we talk about the idea, and you talk about the idea of the secular religious divide that we're experiencing, you know, persecution, etc. Well, why should we be surprised? Don't we live in a country with a separation from church and state? Isn't that the way it's always been?
Well, that's true, but you know, there's nothing wrong with being a secularist if it's moderately expressed. I would say the same about religion. The problem in our society today is you got religious fanatics and you got secular fanatics. Mm-hmm. Now, the religious fanatics are pretty easy to determine who they are. But when it comes to the secular fanatics, the problem is that many of them are members of the ruling class. They're in the command seats. They're the decision makers. They're the ones who affect ideas. They're in the arts. They're in the business community. They're actually in the medical schools now, too. Certainly, they're in higher education. And they actually affect the contours of our culture. Now, we don't care about if somebody's a secularist. I don't care if somebody's an atheist. I do care if somebody's a militant atheist, because that means they're going to target my religion. It always comes down to us.
You know, if I may add to that, Doug, I was with my family last weekend, mm-hmm. and the Italian side of my family, you wouldn't know that I'm half Italian because the Kengor is a Polish name, but my mom's 100% Italian. And we were talking about my great-grandfather, Pietro Giovinazzo, about the moment that the KKK showed up on the front lawn of the family farm, mm-hmm. with Pietro and Rose Maria and their 10 kids. And they said, "We're going to burn you out." And the KKK was led by a Protestant pastor at that mm-hmm. moment. You know, today, the people that are persecuting Catholics mm-hmm. they're not Protestant pastors, of course. They're secularists, right? Mm-hmm. They're liberal left-wing academics. They're journalists. They are people like the Southern Poverty Law Center, mm-hmm. people like, while the ACLU would claim that it doesn't, they're supposed to be good defenders mm-hmm. of religious freedom, but they're really not. No one knows that better than Bill Donahue, by the way. but yeah, the battle today is against secularists who lead the cancel culture and really persecute Catholics and Christians generally.
Well, let me ask you, Colin, because obviously this is a Catholic program when we're talking about our Catholicism, Christianity, and those kind of things. Do you see this also from a theological perspective of kind of being that St. Paul, the struggle between the merely political and the spiritual, this, you know, ongoing spiritual mm-hmm. war that's going on, that's being played out in our secular society?
Yeah, that's right. And the father of lies, the father who is a murderer from the beginning, he's behind all of it. It's sort of like in the Marvel movies that everybody likes. You've got this organization, Hydra, you cut off one head and then three more grow. So we have all kinds of organizations today that sort of make up this Hydra-headed monster in the world, whose principal object of criticism is the message of Christ and the principal exponent of that message, mm-hmm. the Catholic Church. And so they go at it, and they are unceasing in their efforts to squeeze out of society mm-hmm. Any reference to much less allegiance to religion in politicians and in others. Now, mm-hmm. they can't do it because we have many people who will fight strongly for that who are in politics as well as outside of it. But this is what they would mm-hmm. like to do, to expunge religion and Christ and God from the right. public square everywhere where it's manifest.
Let me ask you, Bill, to play off of something Paul said about, you know, talking about the KKK. Even I grew up on Long Island, and the KKK was very big in the 1920s, apparently, even on Long Island. So, I mean, we talk about persecution today and the persecution of believers, but, you know, we don't have this kind of, you know, people lighting crosses on people's lawns anymore. Is it done in a more insidious way?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it's in a nonviolent way. When in fact you have law firms that only go after the Catholic clergy, they're not interested in sexual abuse if it's done by some other religion. They're not interested in sexual abuse if it's done by the public school teachers. They will never, ever sue the public schools. It doesn't happen. They'll only go after the Catholic Church. When you had the Obama administration and they had the HHS mandate, that was nonviolent. What were they going to do? Force the Little Sisters of the Poor to provide for abortion-inducing drugs, not just contraception, abortion-inducing drugs. Under the Biden administration, they sent their goons into the Catholic churches just to go after, not radical Catholics. We knew that was a ruse. They're going after people who happen to be pro-life, who believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman, and that you can't change your sexes. They were called, quote, domestic terrorists. Domestic terrorists. The Southern Poverty Law Center, I'm glad that you guys mentioned that, because they took umbrage when Antifa was called a domestic terrorist organization, when in fact they are. No, this we're dealing here with people who are in the major seats of power, and they're not shy about coming after people of faith. It's not just Catholics, obviously, mm-hmm. But it's anybody who's a man or woman of faith that they're going to target us in very nonviolent ways.
So, Paul, in the public square, why don't you follow up on that?
Yeah, and so they might not use violence against you, right? Mm-hmm. But they'll destroy your livelihood. Yeah, you know, they will. You know, they mm-hmm. will sue you. They will shame you. They will try to get you fired. You know, they'll engage in cancel culture against you. And to again go back to the Southern Poverty Law Center, mm-hmm. I'll never forget. You know, I'm a convert to I'm actually a revert. That's a long mm-hmm. story. But in the early 2000s, I was speaking to the Family Research Council in Washington D.C. Wonderful pro-life. Largely evangelical family group in Washington, D.C. And not long after that, and actually this crosses into violence, doesn't it? A would-be assassin walked into the front door, right. and he had read that the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, had identified the Family Research Council as a hate group. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they were against same-sex marriage, right? And this guy walked in with Chick-fil-A bags filled with guns and ammunition, and was going in there to shoot the place up. Mm-hmm. I had students, current students who were interns there at the time, mm-hmm. former students who worked there. The only reason that the guy was stopped was because the security guard tackled him. And it didn't stop with SPLC there. They went on to label a number of different state-level groups as hate groups. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, in the summer of 2024, they labeled Charlie Kirk and TPUSA as a hate group mm-hmm. because of what they were saying against transgender and different LGBTQ issues, but they will, they'll destroy mm-hmm. your livelihood. They'll make life hell for you mm-hmm. if you merely believe what mm-hmm. the Catholic Church has taught about marriage and two genders and a man and a woman shall mm-hmm. leave their parents and become one flesh. What the Church has taught for 2,000 years suddenly makes you a hater.
Right. It seems to be the case. Colin, mm-hmm. let me ask you, what about the idea that we're supposed to stand up for the truth as individuals, but sometimes we see what looks like the church, and whether it's the Catholic Church or just Christianity in general, kind of conforming itself to this kind of culture rather than fighting back against it or evangelizing it.
Well, I think those who hold the gospel dear will, as individuals and or as ecclesiastical bodies, will do so. And so I would say that it's not just the Catholic Church which has been attacked, but Paul mentioned the evangelicals who were part of the family group. Mm-hmm. Evangelicals are pro-life. They want the same responsibility to all human life that we as Catholics want. So it's the message of the gospel that is being attacked. We are certainly, as the oldest institution and the one that goes back to Christ himself, we are the principal inheritor of that hatred, but we are not the only inheritor, because to proclaim the truth in the public square today is for many identified as an offense, and that's why they go against, they persecute the things that they do. And so we have now whole states given over to this kind of regime where the truth is not welcome, and perversity and error is welcome. So it's a battle that is being fought on many fronts with believers, with Orthodox Jews, and even, I would say, in many cases, with people in Islam who are not been radicalized. Mm. And so this is across the board an effort to destroy what vestiges of belief in God, first of all, but mm-hmm. especially the concrete truths which Christianity teaches, particularly the Catholic Church.
So let me ask you, Bill, Colin was talking about, you know, that idea of people speaking out in the public space, et cetera. Why does it seem to be that it's only kind of like, let's say, Orthodox Christianity or Catholicism that seems to be a taboo, where every other faith group, or, you know, whether they're white witches or whatever, fill in the blank of every esoteric belief system, is treated with respect?
Well, that's true. We're not feared the way Muslims are. We're not respected the way Jews at least used to be. That's changing tremendously. But, you know, listen, we are, at the end of the day, we're the Cadillac, okay? Some people take offense at that. We are the heart and soul of Christianity. There's no Christianity without the Catholic Church. We're the big fat target. We've been around for 2,000 years, hierarchical, have the Pope at the top. If you really want to destroy religion, or at least disable it, then why don't you go after the big guy? Because if you can get us, the others will begin to fall as well. Evangelicals are not as big. There aren't as many Orthodox Jews and Orthodox Christians. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are some very good Muslims out there who have not been radicalized, as Colin said, who are with us. And certainly, let's not forget Mormons. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the Catholic Church is the one that set the tone. We're the micrometer. We're the mm-hmm. ones who've got the richest scriptural traditions. We're the ones who've got the teachings. I just read the encyclical of Leo. I mean, 42,000 words. There's no other religion that is out in front on these issues like us. So they know who to get to us. And I remember when they broke in ACT UP back in December of 1989 into St. Patrick's Cathedral, and Cardinal O'Connor was shocked. Father Benedict Groeschel said, "Listen, they know who they're going after. They're going after us because that's where the power is."
Right, and Channel 13 PBS featured a POV on that whole thing. I remember watching that film, proudly showing that as a particular program, which they would never do if it had to do with other particular denominations or religions. Let me ask you, Paul, on the political sphere and dealing with that, you know, we hear about the controversy maybe with Trump and the present Holy Father has gone back and forth, but there have been times in the past when there's been some cooperative efforts, right?
Yeah, and I should say, one of our readers at the American Spectator emailed me and said, "Why are you guys talking so much about the Pope, right?" Well, it's because that's what everybody focuses on. I mean, a year ago this time, there was a conclave that picked the successor to Pope Francis, and everybody in the world was following it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's no comparable person right now who can speak to just war doctrine, right, or the war with mm-hmm. Iran. I mean, the Archbishop of Canterbury, maybe. I mean, most people don't even know who that person is, right?
She's
a female right now.
It's a she.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. Hey, name who it is, right? Billy Graham's gone, so there's no equivalent leader anywhere mm-hmm. in the Protestant world. But to get to your point, mm-hmm. yeah, I know exactly what you're alluding to. Pope John Paul II and mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan, and they got along beautifully. And when you get two leaders like that, the head of the world's temporal power and spiritual power aligned in a common mission, I mean, truly great things can happen. And what was so unique, too, about those two, Doug, and you and I talked about this a lot because I did a book on this subject, A Pope and a President, and they were both shot just 6 weeks apart, March 30th, 1981 for Ronald Reagan, May 13th, 1981, Feast Day of Our Lady of Fatima for John Paul II. Both almost died, and then they came together a year later at the Vatican and said that they believed that God had spared their lives for a special purpose, which was to work together to defeat militant atheistic Soviet communism. So common mission, common bond, and, you know, unfortunately, you don't have anything like that right now with the current American president and gee, the current American pope. Mm-hmm. The pope's an American of all things. But, I mean, maybe at some point, I would say that those two will come together and they'll meet and they'll get along. Mm-hmm. And everybody's going to expect fireworks. But just like when Donald Trump met with Pope Francis, everybody thought, wow, they got along really well. Look, they're smiling. Wow, no one lectured. One of them didn't lecture the other one. And that'll happen, too, with Leo and Donald Trump, I'm sure. Only a matter of time.
Well, let me ask you, Colin, with that idea of us getting along, where there's positive statements on both sides, how does that fit into the church's evangelizing of the culture and the idea of standing up for what it believes? Because sometimes, you know, people have had concerns. Let me go and backtrack slightly and say, certainly in the other denominations, there's kind of been this kind of counter truth out there, this reinterpretation of the gospel in many denominations that apparently are, quite honestly, seemingly falling apart. And, you know, it seems like we really need to put the truth of the Catholic Church at a forefront and not be embarrassed by it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think one of the things that many people, even in the church, you know, if you read the church's theology, you get a very concrete idea of what the way things ought to be. What the church also has to take into account is the way human beings are and how to evangelize them. So sometimes there's not exactly a meeting up of that. I learned this in reading about the history behind the writings of John Paul II when I was at the Angelicum doing my licensed dissertation on his theology of self-gift. And so he saw the beginning of the modern mentality, a very existentialist mentality, a very ego, self-oriented mentality where everything is judged by what own reflections of our own mind. And he saw this as a great danger. And he said, what you need to have is a viewpoint which takes account of the way in which people know and understand the truth, the slowness sometimes of how we come to acquire the truth, and also at the same time what it is God is calling us to do. And he tried to mate those two together very much in his pontificate. He didn't back off on teaching the truth, but he also understood the necessity of conversion and allowing people, you know, the opportunity to convert. And I think we've certainly seen that at EWTN with the many non-Catholic intellectuals coming into the church and the show The Journey Home and so on, how this process of growth in things comes from the church speaking the truth, but also in the same time being generous in recognizing not everybody's conscience is at the same place, but if they follow their conscience, it will lead them to the truth, to Christ, to the church. And so in dealing with the world, in dealing with presidents and prime ministers and others, the Pope must continually lean forward on the gospel, but at the same time be patient and recognize the slowness with which basically most of humanity adopt those principles and live according to them. And so this is the way Christ acted. He recognized human weakness. He recognized the process of internal growth in evangelization, as well as the necessity to always speak the truth publicly.
Well, let me ask you, Bill. I mean, coming out of Vatican II, one of the great charges for the laity was to really go out in the you know, the byways and the highways and proclaim the faith. Yet it seems like many times we seem to be, and even recently again, spending a lot of time talking about what roles inside the church particular lay people can participate in and not participate, as if that's the central theme. Now, you've had a whole ministry and a whole apostolate basically based on going out into the public square. How do you see that?
Well, I wish that there were more lay Catholics who would. I think a lot of it is a matter of intimidation. I mean, I've spoken to enough of them. People are afraid. I mean, I've had my share of death threats. I've had bodyguards. Mm-hmm. I'll be at a rally tonight where they expect it could be violence. So I don't blame a lot of people for saying, well, I don't want to get involved too much, because there are a lot of nuts out there. And I'm in New York City. Nobody has any shortage of nuts when it comes to New York City. And I've never seen such hatred. I mean, when I can sit here in my office, I'm right across the street from Penn Station and Macy's, down the block from the Empire State Building. And what I see in Jewish New York, I mean, it's largely Jewish and Catholic, people going down the street with swastikas, waving swastikas, wanting to destroy Jews, globalize the Intifada. It goes well beyond Catholics. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people are just simply saying, you know, Bill, I wouldn't want your job for a million years. Quite frankly, a number of years ago, I'm not going to mention their name, but two distinguished Protestant guys from the other part of the out west, they came to see me because they were thinking about setting up a Protestant civil rights organization based off of the Catholic League. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you ready for the blowback? Mm-hmm. And they said, what do you mean? I said, you know, there's some pretty rough going here. And I said, you have to be more explicit. So I got up and I opened up a closet and I opened up a box. I showed it to them. The box says death threats. It's all the tape of all the threats that I've gotten. And they said, thank you very much. That was the end of the conversation. They never set up the organization.
Right. Well, isn't that part of the whole idea then, Paul, as well? Is it's really trying to intimidate. That's why they try to shut people down, kind of Saul Alinsky-like.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right, Doug. And in fact, there's something, too, at a lower level than what Bill was talking about. I'm really shocked today at the number of people who don't just agree to disagree. And I get emails all the time from people on my side politically who, if I write an article about Donald Trump and 9 out of 10 points are positive, right, and they'll focus on that one and just launch on you, right? And mm-hmm. I'm never reading you again. Well, you must be just go off on you. Mm-hmm. And sadly, these tend to be, if I could like narrow down the demographic, they tend to be like people like 70 years and older. It's not even younger people. I can tell you, my college students are way more open-minded, right? So it used to be like this intransigent, radical, you know, college student, you know, who would get in your face if you disagreed. I'm finding the people that are really intransigent like that, they're older. I hate to use the term boomers, right? But they tend to fit the demographic. And I used to think it was largely a phenomenon of the left. But man, I'm seeing it on the right as well. And it's hard to operate in that space, that sphere, if you will, right? Yeah. Where people are just, they can't agree to disagree. And then also, too, the lack of civility and civil discourse. Right. It seems like they can't communicate. I mean, if I want to find an email sometimes, I just type in, okay, let's see, name, okay, F, U, right? Boom, it pops up, right? I mean, they can't even dialogue without using profanity and vulgarity. So it's, and I fear it's only getting worse.
And that's the anonymous nature of the internet, obviously, that people can feel empowered to do that without any consequences. In fact, that's, I think, a big problem we have in our society right now, is that people feel like they can act and there are no consequences. Colin, let me ask you the idea of the kind of the secular rival vision that exists, and why it seems to be, as Bill was talking and Paul was talking, the idea of targeting the Catholic Church, as some have said, an obstacle to their autonomy. The idea that, you know, it's the last vestige of holding them back from being as happy as they think they can be.
Yeah. Well, you almost have to start with the Catholic vision of how everything will end up. And that will be that there will be a consummation of all things, a last judgment, and those who did good will be called to glory, and those who did evil will be sent into eternal punishment. This is not a happy picture for people who have rejected the message of God. And it's quite understandable, I suppose, the anger that Paul and Bill have mentioned, you know, is they see the writing on the wall, but they can't just let go of their own egotisms, their own ideologies that they've acquired in life. And it's interesting. I've seen the same phenomena of it seems to be our generation that is capable of this. I call them the Gray Panthers. They're not the Black Panthers because they're not killing and blowing things up, but they're the Gray Panthers who are using other means to basically do the same thing. And so they're fighting those battles. And it's odd that the closer they get to that moment of death, the more vociferous they seem to become. And I think it really is, you know, the personal eschatology of the individual. What do they think this world is about, and what do they think their life is about, and how it will end? Well, and it's not a pretty picture.
Well, let me stand up for those cranky boomers. On the one level, I think a lot of boomers' reaction and why their hackles are up is because they've heard so much of this kind of quizzling or weaselly language at times, where things are said and doors are open and they've been snookered. And they thought, and so they're getting very black and white, because every time they go anywhere, and this is not a good thing, but they're waiting to hear when they're going to drop that thing in there. There used to be a pamphlet that used to come out and was used in churches. I could go to the fourth page in the back, and that's when the weasel phrases would come out that basically obliterated everything that was church dogma before that. Anybody want
Doug,
to pick that up?
If I could add to that, so as someone who just wrote the biography of Pope Leo, I'm seeing a lot of conservative Catholics who, after 12 years of like kind of pope-splaining with Pope Francis, they have a really short fuse with Pope Leo. And it took mere months into Leo's papacy, and they were going after him in a way that it took them 8 or 9 or 10 years to go after Pope Francis.
Right.
And so there's not a lot of charity right now with Leo, because what they went through with Francis, they think, here we go again, here we go again. You know, this statement on that actually means this. And so there's not a lot of charity and grace right now toward Pope Leo, because a lot of it, for a lot of these folks, they felt it was exhausted under Francis.
Right, exactly. Bill, you got the last 30 seconds. What do you want our audience to know?
Well, first of all, everything Paul said, I totally agree with. There's a lot of people who are just being spent. They felt somewhat betrayed under Francis, and they were hoping for JP2 or Benedict, two towering philosophers who are incredible intellectuals. They're going to be hard to top. But I say this, like Colin is talking about, he mentioned truth an awful lot. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. If we are not galvanized in the pursuit of truth, and the Academy has lost it, then we're going to lose it too. Because if you're pursuing truth and you're willing to speak out, eventually our side will prevail. And so I'm not pessimistic in the long run.
Yeah. Very good. Amen. Thank you so much, wonderful panel, Paul Kengor, Bill, and Colin, for being with us, of course. And we want to thank you all for joining us. And don't forget to join us next time right here on the Catholic Sphere, when we'll bring up another topic dealing with theological issues in the Catholic Church. I'm Doug Keck. We'll see you then.